Jacob Marcus. Daily, Ruby. The picture was of a 10-year-old me, eyes wide under a ratty mess of wet, dark hair. That's right, I thought. It had been raining the day they brought us in.
What the hell?
I held it up for him to see. $400,000 for a reward?
What?
Oh, that. Chubbs plucked the tablet from my hands and said grimly,
Congratulations, you're officially a big score.
That's... I just...
Why?
Do you really need me to break it down for you? He said, sighing. You escaped from Thurmond with the help of the League and our, oh, by the way, an orange. What are all of the listings? I asked. I've never been in Maine or Georgia.
He held the screen up for me to see. Look closer.
Sighted outside of Marietta, Georgia, moving east, J. Lister. At least five of them were from J. Lister, otherwise known as the teenager in the driver's seat next to me.
I would have done more, but you get penalized for spamming the network with false tips. I try to do that for you and Lee whenever I can, to throw off the other skip tracers.
What about Zoo?
Same, he said, but not nearly as much. It looks bad when you're only updating for the same kids and not thinking about distances and all that. I can't post that I saw you in Maine and, 2 minutes later, post I saw her in California. I have a story for her figured out, though. As far as the skip tracers know, she's somewhere in Florida.
Do you think she and the others actually made it to California? I asked. There haven't been any updates in the PSF network the League had access to. I checked last week again, and still nothing. Chubbs cleared his throat.
I'd like to think she did. Once we find Lee, we'll just have to go see for ourselves.
The others were in our line of sight, out of the front windshield. Vida was attempting to take down the tent by beating it into submission. Jude was simply stretched out on his back in a grassy patch of earth, staring up at the sky, the compass resting on his chest. It was cold, but the sunlight was out for the first time in days. He was regarding the sky with a kind of amazed wonderment.
What do you think he's looking at?
Chubbs asked, craning his neck forward over the wheel to follow Jude's gaze up.
Is that kid mentally... sound?
I would guess his brain is about 10,000 miles away from here, crafting the tale of this heroic adventure, I said. But, yeah, he's a sweet kid. Hyperactive, totally unwilling to accept reality, but sweet.
If you say so, Chubbs muttered.
Vida let out a strangled scream, uprooting one of the pikes holding the tent in place. She reached down and flipped the whole structure over onto its side and smashed her foot into it for good measure.
Why am I the only one working? She yelled. Hello?
Chubbs was already bursting out of his door before I had a hand on mine.
Could you not destroy my tent, you incompetent, ungrateful wretch? He bellowed. I'm incompetent?
Vida's voice went hoarse.
Who's the stupid asshole who threw away the instructions?
With one quick glance to make sure Vida wasn't going to impale Chubbs with the pike she held in her hand, I reached for the tablet and switched it back on. For 2, 3, 4 agonizing seconds, all I saw was the slow spin of a gray circle as the device loaded itself. It snapped to the home screen with a small beep, a tiny menu that ranged from emergency to database to updates. Above that was a digital map of the United States, one that looked like it could be used for actual navigation. That wasn't what I needed it for. My stomach was clenched into a tight fist of anxiety, but my fingers were steady as I typed in the name. Gray. Clancy. And then the pain released with a single long breath. No records found. It was another 4 hours to Nashville, with Chubbs and me splitting the driving duties. Seeing him behind the wheel instead of the seat behind me was strange enough, but his relaxed, confident posture there made him look like a different person. I was forcing myself to adapt, trying to come to terms with the fact that this Chubbs was not the one who had been taken from me.
How could he be, after everything? Aside from his reaction to Vida's baiting and insults, he was calmer, outwardly. Every now and then, I would look over and see a shadow flit across the sharp lines of his face. Tell me, I would think, but the thick clouds would pass overhead, peeling back to submerge the road in brilliant sunlight, and he'd look like himself again, at least until it came time to eat. In the past, Chubbs had complained and railed against just the idea of stopping to have one of us go in and buy food from a store or restaurant. It had always been Liam who went out to buy it, with Chubbs's loud protests trailing behind him like a nagging shadow.
Oh, come on. It'll be fine,
he said when he insisted on parking at a rest stop with a handful of people already milling around it. It was becoming readily apparent that he used his skip tracer identification like it was a bulletproof shield, flashing it to anyone who gave him a second look. A part of me wondered if he was too used to playing this part, or if something inside him had really shifted. The rest of us waited, scooted as far down in our seats as possible, while Chubbs took his time using the restroom, mining the vending machines, and breathing in the fresh wintry air.
I thought you said this kid was smart, Vida hissed.
He is. I watched him over the curve of the dashboard.
Then he's just freaking rude, she shot back. Or he's trying to get us caught.
No, it wasn't that. Chubbs was a lot of things, but he wasn't malicious enough to try to push someone out who needed his help. Oh, really? Came the small voice at the back of my mind. Isn't that exactly what he tried to do with you? I shook my head as he climbed back into the SUV, tossing his haul of chips and candy onto my lap. Chubbs glanced at me, then looked again.
What are you doing?
My lips parted in surprise.
What do you think? Any of these people could have reported us.
Chubbs's brows drew together, the realization finally coming to him. He looked at the others, still crouched down in the back. Jude had his arms wrapped around his knees, burrowed down into the gully of space between the metal grate and his seat.
Yep, Vida said to no one in particular. Just a fucking idiot.
It's okay, Jude said with forced brightness.
They wouldn't have called us in. They didn't look like PSFs or skip tracers anyway.
Skip tracers didn't have a look. Chubbs was evidence of that. He had maybe dressed the part, but he wasn't one of them. He didn't have that detached coldness that seemed to permeate from the others. His reaction now, the way he jammed his key into the ignition, made me wonder if he had ever noticed how irresponsible he was being until this very moment. It didn't become a real problem until we reached the outskirts of Nashville and the blockade the National Guard had set up and staffed with a few dozen of their finest.
City closed,
Jude said, reading the spray-painted sign we flew past. It was a series of signs, one after another.
Flood zone. Slow. City closed. Turn back. National Guard entry only.
City closed. Jude's voice dropped just a little bit more with each one he read, but the SUV only picked up speed. The makeshift station began as a dark, blurry line at the horizon of the snow-slick road and took shape. One barbed tangle of wires and fence at a time.
Slow down, I told Chubbs. Stop for a second.
He ignored both requests. Vida glanced up from where she had been typing out another message to Kate on the chatter.
Oh, yeah. Kate said the city's been blocked off since the summer. Something about how a river flooded the city and some people started rioting when they didn't get any aid.
I sighed, pressing my face into my hands. That information would have been useful to know 20 minutes ago. Back when we were, you know, in the middle of a discussion about the best way into the city. Vida shrugged. Jude began, a distinct note of panic in his voice.
There's a guy coming toward us. He's coming toward us really freaking fast.
Sure enough, a National Guardsman had pulled away from the chain-link fence and dirty yellow barrels they were using to block our path down the road. He was jogging, his gun and supplies jostling with each step. A spike of cold panic shot straight up my spine. The National Guardsman stopped, his hand drifting to the firearm at his side. Then Chubbs asked, "Does everyone have their seatbelt on?"
"You're joking,"
I began. There was no way. He would never. Vida finally looked up from the chatter. Jude yelped as the car lurched forward. Chubbs had floored the pedal. I reached over and jerked the wheel, forcing the car to veer sharply to the left. Chubbs tried to shove me off, but I guided the car around, narrowly missing the soldier who had come out to meet us. He eased up immediately on the gas, but we were already headed back in the right direction, away from the fence, the soldiers, and danger. Vida slammed her palm against the grate, and the pedal floored under her influence, locked hard against the SUV's dirty carpet. Chubbs tried pumping the brakes, and the car seemed to shriek in protest. When the blockade was finally a small blip in the rearview mirror, Vida lifted her hand and Chubbs's foot came down on the brake. The seatbelts snapped over our chests. I started when I'd finally caught my breath.
Why? You...
Damn it! Chubbs began, slapping his hand against the steering wheel. He didn't sound like himself. He had yelled at me before countless times, but this was... I actually felt myself shrink.
How dare you do that? How dare you?
If you're going to fight, can you do it outside? Vida said. I already have a big enough headache without hearing Mommy and Daddy at each other's throats. Fine by me. I unbuckled my seatbelt, ignoring Chubbs's growl as he did the same.
What?
He demanded, coming around to meet me at the front of the SUV. His boots slid through the snow, clinging to the dark surface of the road. His breath was hot with anger. It fanned out white and sticky against my stinging cheeks.
What was that? I asked. Were you really going to force your way through?
It was how he shrugged, like it didn't matter, like it was nothing that made me crazy.
I can't believe it, I said. Wake up. Wake up. This isn't like you at all.
I wouldn't have had to do it if you didn't stick me with those stupid kids. I could have flashed some papers and we would have been in. He dragged a hand through his tuft of dark hair. And you know what? Even if I had gone through with it, it's not like they would have caught up to us. Honestly, weren't you and Lee the ones who always said we had to take risks if we were going to get by?
Are you?
I could barely choke the word out.
Are you serious? Risks? Where is your head? You are so much smarter than this.
Did it matter that I was yelling, or that he was doing his best to try to tower over me with his height? Did it matter that the other two were watching us through the windshield?
Sure, we would have gotten through the blockade, maybe even miles away. But what if they got your license plate number and reported that? What if up the road there was another blockade and they were waiting for us there? What would you have done? You're the only one with papers. You would have been fine, but if they had taken me, or Jude, or Vida, could you have lived with that?
What about Liam? He shouted. You know, the one whose brain you decided to fry? The one who's lost or dead? Or near to it because you decided to screw with him? Remember him? Every inch of my skin felt like the branches of the trees overhead, stripped bare and coated with frost. You do blame me.
Who else would I blame?
He shouted.
It's your fault, damn it! And now you're acting like this? Like those kids are more important to you than us? Yeah, I've had to make a few changes, so what? I've been getting on just fine making my own decisions. You keep acting like I'm still bleeding out in your hands, but I'm fine. I am better than fine. You're the one who's wrong. You're...
I hadn't even heard the door open, but Vida was suddenly standing beside me, her shoulder pressed against mine.
Back off.
I felt her hand close around my wrist.
You don't want us here, ass clown. Fine, we're out.
Jude was white-faced as he scurried around the back, clutching our few possessions in his hands.
I'm ready,
he said, his voice betraying none of the fear I saw in his eyes.
Let's go.
I took the leather jacket that Jude passed to me, my mind trying to catch up with what was happening. Chubbs's fingers caught the pocket and held tight.
What are you doing?
I think... My whole face felt numb. I think this was a bad idea.
No, my brain was screaming. No, no, no!
Ruby, he said, shocked. Tell me you're not... Ruby!
You think we're worthless? You want to prove that you're so damn brave? Vida shouted back. Go ahead and get your stupid ass killed. We'll see who finds Stuart first.
Vida hooked her arm through mine and began to haul me down the slight curve of the highway's shoulder, down into the snow-splattered forest ahead. It was deep and dark and lovely. I couldn't see the beginning or end of it.
Asshole, she was muttering. God damn him, I hate his stupid ass face and his stupid ass driving. Acting like we're as dumb as dirt. Asshole!
Jude jogged to keep pace with us. Branches snapped around my face, clawing at my hair. The flashes of sunlight through the treetops were disorienting, blinding red one moment and orange the next, and all I could think was fire. All I could see was Chubbs's face close to mine as we clung to each other under the dock at East River while the world burned above us. I felt a hand touch the small of my back, and I just couldn't do it anymore. My legs buckled, and I barely managed to catch myself on a tree before I collapsed completely.
What are you doing? I thought. This is Chubbs. This is still Chubbs.
For several agonizing minutes, I couldn't hear anything beyond my own harsh breathing. I felt physically ill, like I was about to heave up everything in the pit of my stomach.
This is Chubbs, who says things he constantly regrets, even if they're the truth. Who lets his anger get the best of him, especially when he's afraid. And you left him. You walked away. That was Chubbs, and you left him.
I felt a hand tugging on mine. Jude stood beside me, his EMT jacket crinkling.
I think you were both wrong, he said quietly. He doesn't blame you for what ended up happening with Liam. He blames himself. He's only acting like this because he's gotten to the point where he's willing to do anything to set it right.
Why would he think any of this is his fault, though? I asked.
He's a loose cannon, Vida said, glancing back over her shoulder. He survived being shot. Some part of him thinks he's invincible and that he can make stupid mistakes and get away with it. There are other ways he could have traveled, but he chose to run with the fucking wolves. If he's not desperate, if he doesn't hate himself, then he really is just a goddamn idiot.
You guys don't know him, I started.
No,
Jude said carefully. But we know you.
And if you think you haven't been acting the same exact way he has for the past 6 months, then you're a goddamn idiot, too.
Vida turned me back in the direction of the road and gave me a hard shove.
Go get him, then. If you're not back in 5 minutes, we'll head out on our own to find Stuart. You said you didn't have a choice in joining the league? Well, congrats, you freaking-lations. Now you do. Come back with us or don't. But I'm more than capable of doing this up without all of your boo-hoo issues holding me down.
I read her meaning, loud and clear.
I'll be back, I told them. Right back, I swear.
I took a lurching step forward, keeping my eyes on our staggered footprints in the snow, keeping them focused down and ahead because I couldn't stand to think of the others watching me go. I can't leave them, any of them. Not Vida, who was too headstrong for her own good. Not Jude, who couldn't stand the silence or the dark. Not Chubbs. Not after everything. The SUV was still there, parked crookedly on the shoulder. He was in the driver's seat, leaning against the steering wheel. I walked around the back of the car, glancing both ways down the road to make sure there were no other eyes on us, then pulled Liam's jacket around me tighter for support. He didn't see me. His shoulders were shaking, but I wasn't sure if he was only breathing hard or actually crying. I knocked on the window, and Chubbs, my Chubbs, about leaped into the passenger seat in terror.
I'm sorry, I mouthed through the glass.
He had been crying. Something inside me twisted, sharp and firm, as Chubbs opened the door.
You scared the hell out of me, he shouted. Do you know how easy it is to fall and break an ankle when you're walking without directions? Or into a frozen river? Do you know what happens when you get hypothermia?
I leaned in and wrapped my arms around his shoulders. He began. I felt his hands bunch up the back of Liam's jacket with the effort to keep me there.
I'm not the same person. I'm not, and I know that. I'm not okay with who I am or what I had to do, but I'm also not okay with us separating again. Don't do that. Don't just disappear. If you're mad at me, then hit me or something. Just don't think that I don't want to stay with you. I'll always want to stay with you.
I tightened my grip on him, pressing my face against his shoulder.
You're different, too, he said. It's all different now. I just wanted to go back to the way it was when we were in that stupid minivan. Jesus, will you say something?
Don't, I said. Call Black Betty stupid.
I don't know if he was laughing or just crying again, but both of us shook with the force of it. I miss him, he was saying. I miss him so much. I know it's stupid. I'm scared.
He's not dead, I cut in. He's not. He can't be. Chubbs pulled back slowly, lifting his glasses to swipe his arm over his eyes.
That's not what I mean. I'm scared of what he'll say when he finds out about this.
His hands settled again on the wheel.
All of this.
He'll probably make some stupid joke at your expense, I said, and give you another dumb nickname.
No,
he said, clearly struggling.
He'll know.
I suddenly felt very still. There was no other way to describe the dread that crept over me when Chubbs turned away from me.
I told you before about all the paperwork that you need to fill out to register as a skip tracer, he said. But that's only half of it.
Half? I repeated. He nodded, looking miserable.
In order to establish yourself, you have to turn in a kid. There's no other way to put your name in the rankings. You can't cheat the system. Believe me, I tried.
It took an immeasurable amount of time for what he was saying to sink in. With each second that passed, his face became more and more transparent. His thoughts and fears flashed by, unchecked. Who? I asked finally.
Some green kid I found in New York.
Chubbs swallowed hard.
He had been living rough for a few years. I could tell by the look of him. Haunted, you know, hungry. He was practically gaunt. I only saw him because he was trying to break a vending machine at one of those outdoor malls. It was in the middle of the day. There was a whole crowd of people watching him, not getting close to him.
What happened?
I don't know. He didn't even put up much of a fight, Chubbs said, his voice hoarse with emotion. He just looked at me, and I could see that he had given up. And at the time, I was thinking, you know, that he would at least have food in a camp. He would have a bed. He was only a green. They would treat him okay if he kept his head down.
You had to.
What else could I say to that?
It was the only way.
Is that how I'm supposed to explain myself to Lee? Oh, sorry, your life was more important than his? He's not going to understand.
Chubbs cleared his throat.
The fact of the matter is, I would have done a lot worse. I would have done anything to find you guys. It scares me. I feel like if there's not someone there to stop me, I'm not sure what I would do.
That was a feeling I knew well. The sensation of free falling into a dark pit, not knowing how soon you'll hit the bottom of it, or if there even is one. It won't matter, I said. In the end, it won't. After we find Liam and get the intel, you better believe I'm going to burn every single one of those camps to the ground. He looked so uncertain about it,
It broke my heart. I have to. Will you stay with me on this? I whispered. After a moment, Chubbs nodded.
All right.
He cleared his throat again, trying to force it back to its usual gruff tone.
Where did the others go?
They're waiting for us.
Are we walking, then?
He asked.
I'll have to try to hide the car.
I stared at him a moment, confused. Then I understood. He's letting you lead.
Yeah, I said. I think we should try to get into the city on foot.
Chubbs nodded, and there wasn't any discussion after that. We took the car a ways down the highway until we found a smaller access road. With the SUV properly masked in the trees and under whatever foliage we could find, we set off into the woods.
I haven't done this in a while,
Chubbs said, shifting the pack we had put together of supplies and one of the 25 zillion first aid kits he had insisted on packing. He was smiling, just a faint touch, but it was still there.
Wish I could say the same, I said, putting a hand on his shoulder to help steady myself as I hauled my legs over a fallen tree. Where did you say they were?
I hadn't even realized we were back in the same small clearing as before until I saw the dizzy array of footsteps pounded out in the mud and mulch. They'd been good on their word, then. They had split, and we'd have to catch up to them. I looked over at Chubbs to tell him as much, but his eyes were focused down on the snow, his eyebrows knit together. There were more than three sets of tracks here. My brain had taken one look and assumed that Jude had been pacing in his usual way, or that Vida had been circling the clearing impatiently, but there were way too many footprints for that. I saw it then, the way it must have happened. A spiraling circle of steps where Vida had tried to fight, ending in the exposed patch of earth where she had fallen. Across the way, branches broken and littered on the ground. I took another step forward, following the trail until my feet met with a small spray of blazing bright blood on a melting patch of snow. No. The wind took on a low, menacing growl in my ears. They hadn't gone on ahead. They had been taken. 13. It didn't even occur to me that Chubbs might not be able to keep up with my pace as I ran. The group had cleared a path through the mud and pockets of lingering snow, packing it down to a manageable level with their feet. I took in a deep gulp of the dry air, trying to ignore the snow slipping from the low branches of trees and brush as I tore through them. My pants and coat were soaked through by the time I finally skidded to a stop. The trail of prints, so wide and obvious before, came to a definite end at the lip of a frozen stream. Chubbs panted heavily as he came up beside me, one hand pressed hard against his shoulder. I turned to take the bag of supplies he'd packed, but then thought twice. The one he handed me was just as heavy, and I wouldn't be able to get through the snow with both of them, at least not quickly.
"What now?" he gasped between breaths. "They crossed here?"
"No, it's not possible," I said, kneeling down to test the ice. There had to be at least 10 of them. There's no way they all would have made it across without breaking the ice. His eyes narrowed at me as I stood.
You can tell all that just by a few prints?
No, I said. I don't know the exact number, 10 or more. Vida wouldn't have let herself be taken by any less. Chubbs looked doubtful, but he didn't deny the possibility. I walked a ways along the bank of the stream, looking for stray tracks, human or otherwise. They couldn't have just vanished here.
Shit, I thought, threading my fingers through the messy bun I had twisted my hair into. Shit! Could...
Chubbs swallowed, shifting the bag uncomfortably on his shoulders.
Do you think they were taken by soldiers? Ones the blockade sent after us?
I shook my head. They would have taken the road. We would have seen them. Or at least that was what I was telling myself.
Skip tracers, maybe?
This time he was the one to shoot the thought down.
10 of them? Why would they all be out here in the middle of nowhere?
Then, I began. Chubbs's eyes widened as he caught my train of thought.
The tribe of blues we're looking for? he asked. But why put up a fight?
I fought back the first sting of panicked tears. Oh, God. Jude must have been terrified.
They don't understand how it works. They don't have a life outside of the League. We're taught to only trust one another.
It was only dumb luck that I turned back to the stream when I did, that the wind pulled back the evergreen foliage of the trees across the way. Otherwise, I would have missed the silver glint of gunmetal between its branches. I threw myself over Chubbs, tackling him face first into the ground as the first shot was fired. I felt something tug on my backpack, and I turned away from the small explosion of snow and dirty leaves when the bullet tore through the ground beside us. The bullets screeched as they cut through the air following our path as I rolled the two of us back into the shelter of the tree line.
"Keep your head down,"
I whispered to Chubbs, all but shoving him behind a dense cover of growth. The gun I'd fished out of the glove compartment was warm in my hand as I pulled it up from the waistband of my pants. I fired one shot back, aiming for the spot I thought I had seen the person before, across the stream. The shooting from his or her end came to a sudden, unexpected stop. The afternoon air was pale and still between us. It had a sharp quality to it. It smelled like snow.
"Ruby!"
A dark blur dropped out of the tree behind me. I spun, without thinking, and launched my elbow out. It connected with something soft that made an audible crunch as I threw my full weight into the hit. There was a sharp cry of pain, followed by a heavy thump. The impact sent up whirling clouds of snow. I turned back for Chubbs, reaching out for him through the white haze, and felt a hand close over my forearm. The skin was pale, each knuckle torn open or scabbed. I pulled back a step, bringing my knee up to throw the next attacker off, but the fight was over before it started. I felt a cold, sharp blade dig into my spinal column and lowered my arms. I turned, slightly, to look over my shoulder at Chubbs. He was covered in mud, his face ashen.
"Who are you?" I said, coming around slowly to face him, keeping clear of the knife.
"Son of a bitch!"
he hissed. The pitch of his voice had been enough to tell me how old he actually was. My age, a year or two older at most. The boy I'd hit staggered up from the ground, swiping his nose against the sleeve of his threadbare coat, leaving a long, dark streak of crimson on it. The kid with the knife stepped back, but didn't put it away. Bloody Nose held out his hand and I reached out, acting like I was about to put my gun in it. At the last minute, I dropped it and took his hand instead, driving into his mind. His body twitched under my control. I saw a flash of Jude's frightened face in his mind, and it was enough for me.
"What did you do to those kids?"
I snarled.
"The boy and the girl from earlier. Where did you take them?"
Chubbs had a strange look on his face as he watched me, but he stayed silent.
"The guys,"
he said, his voice altered by the sickening angle of his nose. My elbow ached in response.
"The guys brought them to the slip, kid."
"Of course." Those were the first words that sprang to mind, that chipped through the ice that gripped me in place. Of course. Clancy's system had worked so well the first time. Why wouldn't he try it again? Of course. It wouldn't matter who the kids were, only that they'd be willing, or easily swayed by his abilities, to go to war with President Gray. Of course. I had to release the kid from my grip when four other figures appeared in the woods around us, closing in to investigate what had happened. I could control one person, but I wasn't Clancy. Any more than that was impossible, and any attempts to try would have revealed the only upper hand I currently had. I stepped forward, showed them I was unarmed, and motioned for Chubbs to do the same.
"We want to see the slip, kid," I said. "We won't give you trouble."
"That a fact?"
one of them asked, glancing down at the dazed kid at my feet.
"Michael, you hear that? Or did that hit knock your screws loose?"
Bloodnose, Michael, shook his head in an obvious attempt to clear it. A head injury was a decent cover for what I had done to him, but it was taking his little brain so long to recover, I was worried the other boys around us would get suspicious. They didn't seem willing or able to do anything without his permission.
"We're taking them," Michael said. "Make it fast. Two of you stay on this post. I'll send someone back for you."
This guy is the leader, I thought. It wasn't unreasonable. His size alone would have inspired fear, if nothing else. They pushed Chubbs toward me as we made our way back to the stream. I looped one arm around his waist to keep him close. They took our bags and hauled them up onto their shoulders.
"Well,"
Chubbs muttered,
"shit."
We were out in the open again, near the frozen stream, and, more importantly, in the line of sight of the gunman in the tree. There were hands on me, patting me down, feeling around the insides of my boots. I tried not to react as one took my Swiss Army knife from my boot. The freezing air stung my face, but it was the thought of what they might find in Chubbs's pockets that made me go cold to the bone. Chubbs must have read the question on my face, because he shook his head ever so slightly. The kid searching him only found his knife and a pocketful of candy wrappers. He had been with it enough to dump his skip tracer ID in the woods during the attack, or leave it behind in the car then. Thank God. I turned to look across the river, narrowly avoiding Chubbs's kicking feet as he was lifted off the ground and out of my reach. He thrashed into the air in the half-second it took for the kid with the outstretched hand to lift him up and, using nothing more than his freak abilities, toss him onto the opposite bank. I felt the warm tug at the pit of my stomach and recognized the sensation. I didn't have the chance to protest before I was hauled up and over the stream, too, dropped onto Chubbs with a total and complete lack of kindness. The other kids burst out laughing, floating one another over the frozen stream with all the gentleness of calming breezes. Other than that, they didn't speak, didn't offer up a single explanation or confirmation of where they were taking us. Two stayed behind to snuff out our tracks in the soft white powder. We walked in silence. Snow began to fall, catching on my hair and lashes, and cold crept in through the leather of Liam's coat. Chubbs tensed, rubbing his bad shoulder absently. I caught his gaze and I could see my anxiety mirrored in his dark eyes.
"I can't believe it," he muttered. "Again."
"I'll take care of him," I said quietly, looping my arm through his.
"Since that worked so well last time?"
"Hey!"
Michael held up his silver handgun.
"Shut the hell up!"
We were on foot long enough that I began to wonder if we were ever going to reach the encampment, or wherever they planned on taking us. It didn't occur to me until the large river came into sight that we were moving toward Nashville. I understood straight off why they had originally closed the city. Though the river must have surged past its banks months before, most of the water had yet to freeze or pull completely back to its normal level. The water's edges were bloated, drowning the nearby landscape. The river was a monster that only grew larger the closer we came. It was the only thing that stood between us and a looming white warehouse across the way. Waiting for us on the bank were three small, flat rafts that looked like nothing more than crates and spare planks stitched together with bright blue vinyl rope. A kid in white stood on each of them, gripping a long pole. With a group of us spread out over the three rafts, the kids with poles pushed and navigated us through the shallow, muddy water in slow, methodic movements. My fists clenched at my sides. One of the loading docks of the warehouse was open and waiting. With a steadiness I didn't expect, the raft floated the rest of the way to the curled silver door and the dark room inside. The loading platform was raised enough that the rafts were no longer necessary. I was lifted up by the waist and deposited into the arms of another kid waiting there. The girl who caught me was a skinny, pale thing, her green eyes jutting out of the blunt bones of her face. She let out a wet, rumbling cough that came up from deep within her chest, but she didn't say anything as she took my arm and forced me inside. The walls and floors were cement, cracked and tagged within an inch of their lives with old, faded graffiti. The warehouse was roughly the size of a high school gymnasium, and it still held a few clues about its past life. Signs marking where cables and wires could be left. The back wall, the one we were walking toward, had been painted a light robin's egg blue, and though someone had tried to cover them with a layer of white paint, I could still read the black letters spelling out Johnson Electric beneath it. Chubbs fell in step beside me, nodding toward the brown line that ran along all of the walls, about halfway up toward the ceiling. So the water from the river had been that high? Every single step I took, every voice around us, every drip of water from the cracks in the vaulted ceiling seemed to echo. The sounds played off the bare walls and boarded up windows around us. Despite the fact that we were out of the snow and wind, the building wasn't insulated to keep out the persistent chill. Old metal trash cans had been repurposed to hold bonfires, but most of these were located toward the other end of the warehouse, not near the patches of kids scattered by the entrance we had come through. This wasn't anything like East River had been. And the teenage boy, sitting on the raised platform in the back, disappearing in and out of a haze of cigarette and fire smoke, was not Clancy Gray. "Who the hell are you?" There had been a low murmur of interest as we were hauled in, but at my words, it dropped off to silence. My eyes had gone straight to the kid's face, snapping over to it so quickly that I hadn't even noticed the other teens around him until they stepped forward for a better look. There were girls shivering in t-shirts and shorts, leaning against the base of the stage or draped along the crates stacked behind him with only a few blankets between them. Clusters of boys stood around them laughing, some feeding the cloud of putrid gray smoke with their own cigarettes. This kid had to be closer to his 20s than the others. His face was fringed with the beginning of a reddish beard, which he was busy rubbing against the cheek of a girl with long, dirty blonde hair perched on his lap. She was shaking, but I couldn't tell if it was out of fear or cold. When she turned to look at me, I realized the bruise at the edge of her mouth extended all the way to her jaw. The kid's blonde hair was long but slicked back neatly behind his ears. His standard-issue combat boots and PSF's black uniform jacket were spotted with mud but otherwise looked pristine, a little too pristine to have ever been in real use.
"Excuse me?"
A southern accent. "Who?" I repeated. "The hell are you?" All of the teens who sat on his platform turned to look at him in perfect time with one another, but he was only staring at me. I felt the warm tug in my stomach again, and, despite Chubbs's attempt to grab me, my feet slid across the dusty floor toward him. I barely managed to catch myself before I crashed against the side of the platform. Old, stacked crates with water-warped plywood nailed over them. That was all that stage was. His chair was little more than a metal folding one with a fuzzy blanket draped over it, most likely for effect. The teen stood, throwing the girl off him. When she cried out in surprise, he thrust the bowl of whatever he had been eating toward her to shut her up. I fought the urge to search for Vida and Jude in the shadows crawling up around us.
"Where did you find them?"
He crouched down at the edge of the platform to peer at my face. His eyes were green, for the most part. A large blotch of brown covered the upper half of his right eye.
"Up by the creek?"
Michael answered.
"You,"
the leader said, turning to one of the girls on the stage.
"Give him that blanket before he freezes. This guy is a king tonight. Look at the haul he brought in."
The girl didn't seem to understand why or how he could ask her to do something like that. She stared, dumb and mute, at his back, until one of the boys grabbed a fistful of her short, chestnut hair and shoved her forward to the edge of the raised platform. Underneath the warm brown wool sheet, she was wearing a stained yellow t-shirt and a pair of someone's old boxers. No shoes, no socks. Michael ripped the blanket from her fingers, clucking his tongue at her resistance. One of the other kids, a small boy, gave him the water bottle he had been holding, watching with hooded eyes as the bigger kid polished off the rest of it before tossing the crushed bottle back to him. Then he fell into place at the leader's right. How it was even possible for someone to look so smug and proud, cocooned in a blanket with dried blood all over his face, was beyond me. The leader tossed his cigarette onto the ground at our feet, one end still glowing a pulsing red. I kept my eyes at the sliver of exposed skin above the collar of the PSF jacket. An unworn jacket. I had worked on enough of them in the factory to recognize one at first glance. There were no patches, not even the standard American flag. Unless he had ripped all of the stitching out, which was unlikely given that the material wasn't frayed, he had probably plucked the jacket out of a shipment rather than off a soldier. He broke his gaze long enough to glance at Michael. A tight shark's smile stretched across his lips.
He did that?
A nod toward Chubbs. The other teen used his new blanket to wipe at the crusted blood covering his top lip. He opened his mouth, but then clearly thought better about admitting a girl half his size had given his face an adjustment. The first let out a low laugh as he turned back to me.
Elbow, fist, or foot?
Elbow, I said. I'm happy to perform a demonstration on you if you need one. The muttering was back, a few wolfish chuckles rising around me. I set my jaw to keep from saying something else equally stupid. Curb it, I told myself. Feel him out.
A fighter?
He asked, raising his eyebrows.
What's your color, baby?
I didn't realize Chubbs had moved at all until he was standing beside me. She's green, I'm blue. And you are?
They call me Knox, he said. The name Slip Kid mean anything to you?
If you're the Slip Kid, Chubb said, I'm the goddamn Easter Bunny. This is supposed to be East River? Knox stood suddenly at that, his amused smile tightening into a much harsher one.
Not what you thought it'd be?
We caught them the same place we grabbed the other two, just off the highway, Michael supplied oh so helpfully. That girl was a blue too. We could have an initiation tonight.
Knox silenced him with a look. Overhead, the snow had apparently warmed to rain. It slanted down over the metal roof, the only sound aside from the eager whisperings of the kids crowding in around us.
What do you know about East River?
He demanded.
Well, to begin with, Chubbs began, crossing his arms over his chest.
We heard it was in Virginia. I cut him off. We were heading that way when your friends picked us up. Here was the thing. This smug kid, whoever he was, wherever he had come from, was clearly not the real Slip Kid. We knew that. Knox knew that. But if he knew that we knew, I didn't doubt for a second that Knox would dispose of us before we could let everyone else in on the secret, too. The name was legendary. Anyone who could gather this many kids, set up this kind of shop, why wouldn't they believe he was the Slip Kid?
This is some operation you have, I continued, straining my neck to look behind me.
No Jude, no Vida. But this was clearly the tribe of blues Kate had tried to warn us about.
A nice little place.
Is this everyone? Knox snorted, motioning to one of the younger teens next to him. The boy, 12 or maybe 13, went fire red at the attention. Knox muttered something in his ear, and the boy nodded once, then took a running leap off the platform. The last I saw of him was the back of his navy jacket, stained with soot, disappearing out one of the side doors.
I'm Ruby, I said, then thrust a thumb toward Chubbs. This is Charles. Like I said, we are just making our way through, heading east.
Knox returned to his seat and, without any sort of prompt, the same girl as before scurried back to him, handing him the bowl of food. Soup, judging by the splatters that hit his jacket. I didn't miss the way the teens around him seemed to lean in, watching as the broth vanished spoonful by spoonful. Do not look at Chubbs, I ordered myself. I wouldn't have been able to hold back. The girl, in her threadbare outfit, was skin hanging off bird-like bones. Knox waved Michael forward, and he and another teen dumped our backpacks on the platform. Two other girls, younger than the first, sprang to action. Piece by piece, they disassembled the packs of supplies we had so carefully stowed. Goodbye, food bars. Goodbye, first aid kits. Goodbye, water bottles and blankets and matches. Each item they took out was enough to break the thin control I had on my anger. I shifted my eyes up toward where Knox was watching this process, wondering how good it would feel to take his mind apart in the same way. It would be easy if I could just get close to him. When Knox glanced up at us, it was with a completely new expression on his face, one that was hungry, excited.
Where did you get all this stuff?
We picked over an old gas station, I said, taking a small step closer. It's ours. We found it.
What's yours is mine, baby, he said. Everyone here has to earn his or her things.
Chubbs grumbled something under his breath.
Take this all to storage, Knox told Michael. Then you and your guys can eat as much as you want.
Michael grinned, gathering the blanket more firmly around his coat. His team was jumping all over themselves with excitement, pushing past one another to go out the same side door the boy had earlier, except for one teen, the one who hung at the back of the pack. He was average height, wearing an army green coat that was a size too small and had to be worn open. His hair was as long and wild as the others in his group, but he kept his out of his face with a fleece hunter's hat. Just before the door shut, something must have caught his eye, because he turned back, leaning up against the wall there.
Are you with the kids my guys picked up earlier?
Knox asked, drawing my attention back to him. A heavy gold chain slipped out from beneath his undershirt and jacket as he leaned forward.
The hot piece and the scarecrow?
Well, that was one way to describe them. No, I said. Another step closer. Another. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Roo!
Every head in the warehouse swiveled toward that side door. A river of relief broke through me. Vida and Jude stood there, looking slightly worse for wear, but whole. Both of them were without jackets. Jude had given up any sort of pretense of pretending he wasn't freezing, but Vida's jaw was clenched tight, her arms pressed hard against her sides. I saw something flicker in her eyes, but she didn't say anything. I wished the same could have been said for Jude.
See?
He was saying as he poked her arm.
I told you they'd come!
I sighed, turning back to Knox and the platform.
Wanna try that answer again, sweetness?
He asked coldly. I shrugged and said nothing. Damn it.
So a green, a yellow, and two blues walk into my woods,
Knox began. He stood and hopped down over the edge of the platform. Vida and Jude were shoved toward us. He was pacing in front of us, to the amusement of the other kids, just out of my reach.
Now, the two blues, you're mighty welcome here, but of course we'll have to figure out which of you is actually strong enough to join the hunting parties in initiation.
Initiation?
I have to duke it out with him? Vida asked petulantly. I thought you said it was going to be a fight.
Knox laughed, and once Knox laughed, everyone was laughing too.
Honestly,
Vida said, whipping her mass of blue hair back over her shoulder,
you might as well let him go. He's totally worthless. I'll have him laid out on the ground in 3 seconds. Just saying.
Jude wore his confusion plainly, not understanding that this was her warped way of trying to protect Chubbs from a fight he'd never win. I was surprised she cared enough to try.
She's not lying, I said. If you want the better fighter, it's her, hands down. But he's trained in first aid. He's patched me up more than once. Look.
I lifted my hair away from the scar on my forehead. Knox didn't take the bait to examine it closer. He wove his fingers together and rested them on the back of his neck as he seemed to mull this over.
The question is more what we're going to do with you and the yellow.
I did not like the direction this conversation was heading, and neither did Jude. I felt him start to shake, just a little bit, and I closed one hand over his wrist.
We don't take on weak ones,
Nock said.
This isn't a pity parade or a homeless shelter. I'm not about to waste food on a green or a yellow. No one here can vouch for you, which means you'll have to prove yourself in other ways.
Chubbs turned on him, his fists clenched at his sides, but another voice rose up before his had the chance to. It was small, more timid than I remembered, but I recognized it.
I can vouch for them.
At East River, Clancy had relied on two different kids to run security for the camp. Hayes, the ogre-sized brute who ran hits for supplies, and Olivia, who coordinated watch at the perimeters of the camp. To say I was relieved to see a head of long, honey-blonde hair push its way through the crowd was an understatement. But her face? I recognized the pieces of her, but it was like they had been torn apart and reassembled with a careless hand. She limped, badly, as she moved closer to us. Yes, this was Olivia, but at the same time, it wasn't. Her round cheeks, always flushed with the run she had taken or the orders she had barked out, had sunk in so deeply that it made her eyes look owlish. The golden tan that had kissed her skin was faded to dull ash, and as she turned to look at me, a bolt of horror raced from my heart to the pit of my stomach. Almost the entire right side of her face was puckered with pink scar tissue. It dragged down the corner of that eye, ran down her jawline. It looked as though she'd been mauled by a wild animal or slapped with a fistful of flames.
Olivia! I gasped. Oh my God!
How? No, I knew that she had escaped. Liam had told us as much. When the fires and PSFs came to East River, a few of the watch kids had been lucky enough to get away in time, Olivia included. Liam was the only one who had come back to look for us.
Christ.
Chubbs said, automatically taking a step toward her.
You...
The four of them were with me when we escaped the PSF van that had rounded us up,
Olivia said, ignoring the hand Chubbs raised in her direction. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the boy in the green coat push himself off the door and through the crowd, stopping near Knox's side.
We got separated in the escape through the woods.
The Olivia I had known had been so full of fire, she could have brought the entire warehouse down to a pile of simpering ash. Now, she merely bobbed her head with a meekness that didn't suit her at all.
Ruby is the one who planned the escape, sir.
Oh, yeah,
said the boy in the green coat. He stuffed his hands in his pockets, rocking back on his heels.
I thought they looked familiar. A couple kids gave us a slip that day.
Olivia's gaze flickered toward his, her brows creased in what was either surprise or confusion. It certainly wasn't gratitude on her face.
Really?
Knox's voice was still flat, but I felt his eyes drift back over to me.
And you spent the last few months just wandering around my fine state?
Laying low, gathering supplies, looking for Olivia. I said quickly, risking a glance to the boy. What was he playing at?
Why didn't you mention this to Michael, Brett?
Knox asked.
Or speak up before?
The boy, Brett, shrugged.
Didn't make the connection till now, I guess. Her hair was shorter.
He nodded toward me.
And the other one was dressed different.
They can help me,
Olivia continued, her eyes still on the ground. At least until they prove themselves to you. Knox blew out an exasperated sigh. He began to pace again, each step falling like thunder in the silence of the warehouse. There was almost a little skip to his step as he walked.
Fine, he said, looking up. Take the yellow and green. Charles, too.
And just like that, he was out of my reach. I was useless to get us out of there.
The hot piece will stay and keep us entertained,
Nock said, smoothing his hair behind his ears with a grin. He nodded to the boys at his left.
Strip their jackets, take anything valuable they might still have on them, and keep them outside, where the trash belongs.